Well, here we are in our Bible study segment. Ladies, if you have your Bibles, you can open them up to 1 Samuel. And our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert, is here. Thanks for joining us, Beth.
Hey, Amy. Today, we're going to see how things are going for Saul and for David. We're going to be reading in 1 Samuel chapter 19, verses 8 through 24. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to 1 Samuel chapter 19. And there was war again. And David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them a great blow, so that they fled before him. Then a harmful spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. And David was playing the lyre. And Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear, but he eluded Saul, so that he struck the spear into the wall. And David fled and escaped that night. Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him, that he might kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, told him, "If you do not escape with your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." So Michal let David down through the window, and he fled away and escaped. Michal took an image and laid it on the bed and put a pillow of goat's hair at its head and covered it with his clothes. And when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, "He is sick." Then Saul sent the messengers to see David, saying, "Bring him up to me in the bed, that I may kill him." And when the messengers came in, behold, the image was in the bed, with the pillow of goat's hair at its head. Saul said to Michal, "Why have you deceived me thus, and let my enemy go, so that he has escaped?" And Michal answered Saul, "He said to me, 'Let me go. Why should I kill you?'" Now David fled and escaped, and he came to Samuel at Ramah, and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and lived at Naoth. And it was told Saul, "Behold, David is at Naoth in Ramah." Then Saul sent messengers to take David, and when they saw the company of the prophets prophesying, and Samuel standing as head over them, the Spirit of God came upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. When it was told Saul, he sent other messengers, and they also prophesied. And Saul sent messengers again the third time, and they also prophesied. Then he himself went to Ramah and came to the great well that is in Seku. And he asked, "Where are Samuel and David?" And one said, "Behold, they are at Naoth in Ramah." And he went there to Naoth in Ramah, and the Spirit of God came upon him also. And as he went, he prophesied until he came to Naoth in Ramah. And he too stripped off his clothes, and he too prophesied before Samuel, and lay naked all that day and all that night. Thus it is said, is Saul also among the prophets? Okay, so we see that after yesterday, where Saul was brought back to reality by Jonathan, another war breaks out, and David goes to the fight. David is a masterful warrior for all his lack of stature, and the enemy flees before him. For my part, that would be how I would want to fight, because then I wouldn't have to do any fighting if everyone ran away. But this might have frustrated a warrior, having to chase them and then kill them. I kind of picture Reepicheep from the Chronicles of Narnia, which I've been rereading with my sons, saying, "Stop running and stand here and fight!" But anyway, after David returns from this battle, and most likely with more accolades for his abilities, Saul is afflicted with the injurious spirit again. Remember the cure for Saul when he was afflicted this way? Music by David. So David is playing the harp to help him. Why Saul was sitting there with his spear in his hand, I would wonder if I were David, especially after the last time with the spear. But then, you also don't make demands on the crazy king. Saul again tries to kill David with his spear, but David gets away as the spear was driven into the wall. That was a lot of force behind that spear. If it could not only penetrate the wall, but be driven into it, Saul was absolutely insane with anger. So that night, David makes his escape from Saul's presence. Michal, David's wife, and Saul's daughter knew what had happened to her beloved husband at the hand of her father, and she tells David to hit the road so that he'll live. She lowers him down through a window at night, and he escapes. She then goes back and puts an image or an idol into the bed, making a goat hair wig and putting a cloak over the idol. The classic fool mom and dad with a dummy in my bed while I go out and do what I want ploy. And it works. But pause here for a second before we move on, because we get a clue here as to Michael's character. What did she grab to put in the bed? An idol. What was she doing with an idol? Well, it was probably one of the household gods that the people would worship and pray to. And she has it handy. It is right there for her to use without any trouble at all. She grabbed the goat hair to pretend it was his head and an idol to mimic David's body. That tells us a lot about Michael and who she was worshiping. And then she lies, flat out. She sins there too. Remember when Samuel was worried about what to tell Saul when God was sending him to anoint David? God didn't really give Samuel an answer to his question, but he also didn't tell Samuel to lie. But here we see that Michael has an idol and she lies so easily. We will see later more of Michael's heart and where she really is focused, but for now, keep that in mind. Michael loved David and wanted him to be her husband, and she protects him from her lunatic father, but she does so with the use of deceit and idolatry. So when Saul sends his men to capture and kill David the next morning, they meet Michael and she tells them that David is sick. So the men go back to Saul, all of this giving more time for David to make good on his escape and put distance between himself and Saul, and they report this. Saul sends them back to pick up David and the bed and bring them both so he can kill David. Did you catch that? Saul wants the power of killing David. He wants to be the one who takes David's life, but he doesn't want to have to work for it. He wants to destroy his enemy, but he doesn't want to actually work to capture him. He sends his men to subdue David, then to bring him bound so that Saul can finish the job. So much for the warrior king, huh? Remember when Saul became king, his task was to fight God's enemies. He was a warrior. Yet without God's spirit, and with this harmful spirit injuring him, he isn't a warrior anymore. He's a pale shadow of the man he once was. However, when Saul asks to have David brought to him, even in his bed, the trick of Michael is discovered. Michael is now brought before Saul, and Saul asks his daughter why she helped David escape. And again, she lies to her father and tells him that David threatened her life if she didn't help him to get away. The wife that Saul had hoped would be a snare to David has become a snare to Saul instead. How do you think David's feeling at this point? He's on the run for his life. His enemy is the king, and the king is certifiable. He misses his wife, his best friend, Jonathan, and he's running knowing that he has done nothing wrong. Not a thing. Yet, David has God on his side. He has to flee in order to live right now, but God goes with David and continues to provide avenues for David to escape Saul and to do so without sinning. David flees to Samuel. That's what I would have done. I would have gone to the one I knew had a link with God, and I would have stayed there where it was safe. And he and Samuel go to Naoth, which was a place where the prophets lived. Saul is able to track David there, and he sends his men to kill David, not once, not twice, but three times. Why did he have to send three groups of men? Because God was protecting David. David was among God's prophets, and God put barriers in the way of anyone harming David here. And I love that. I love how God does this. The men come into town, and the instant that they see the prophets who are prophesying, these messengers from Saul, they also prophesy. Now, remember, the term prophesy also sometimes means an ecstatic fit or of praise for God. So these men weren't necessarily making great prophetic pronouncements, but they were completely unable to carry out their mission. So Saul sends more men, and the same thing happens. He tries again, and the same thing happens. So finally, Saul himself decides to give it a shot, and guess what? Saul ends up the same way. In fact, Saul ends up falling on the ground in Samuel's presence, stripping and laying there for an entire day and night prophesying. God's very own spirit protects David, his anointed one, from harm by Saul or Saul's men. The final question of this passage underlines how foreign Saul's spirit was from God's. Again, the people ask, as they had asked before they even knew he was a king back in chapter 9, is Saul among the prophets? Can you hear their incredulity? Can you see the surprise and shock on their faces as they ask this? They know Saul's character, and this is not part of it. For Saul, God was always an add-on, not a priority. One more time, God is showing who was really in control, and it's not Saul. God can use whomever he so chooses to do his will, even against their own will. And let's face it, Saul had some serious will here. He wanted David dead. He's taking out his anger and frustration at having everything he worked for taken away from him on David. He's taking out his anger on David. The problem is, Saul didn't earn his kingship. He didn't build it. He didn't work for it. God gave it to Saul. All of it. But Saul felt that he deserved it, or that somehow God still owed him more. This whole thing reheats like a soap opera, doesn't it? The drama, the excitement, the angst, all of it because of one man and his sin. Now is when things get even more exciting, with desert chases and near misses for our hero, but the real hero in all of this is God. He continues to provide for his anointed one, David, while still protecting Saul from any hand but his own. Isn't that amazing? God is in control. He's supreme and in charge. And we'll see his hand through the next week plus and how he works through so many people to take care of David and of Saul too. God will mete out justice to Saul. He will take Saul into his hands. But God will do that in his timing and in his way. There's more that he needs to teach David, to teach Israel and Saul and us about who he is before David becomes the king. So I have just a couple questions for us today. Is there something that you think you deserve from God? Is there something that God has given you and then when it was taken away, you stomp your feet and grab a spear? I'm speaking metaphorically. Please don't grab a spear. Are you building up your perfect life, adding God in on the side and expecting smooth, suffering-free sailing? Do you think God owes you health, wealth, and prestige? Remember John 15, verses 18 through 25 says, if the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will also keep yours. But all these things they will do to you on account of my name, because they do not know him who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would not have been guilty of sin. But now they have no excuse for their sin. Whoever hates me hates my Father also. If I had not done among them the works that no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. But now they have seen and hated both me and my Father. But the word that is written in their law must be fulfilled. They hated me without a cause. And finally, I asked this question on Facebook a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to ask it again here. If you were on trial for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? The phrase, is Saul also among the prophets, tells us how shocked people were when Saul had anything to do with godly matters while acknowledging that God can still do anything he wants. So take some time today and ponder that. I realize that the world only sees the outside and not the heart, but our actions should be a reflection of our hearts, and we are called to check our fruit and be sure we are part of the true vine. Are you part of the true vine? Would the prosecution in the case to convict you of being a Christian have a slam dunk? Or would the case be dismissed for lack of evidence? Don't dwell on the past except to learn from it, but do learn from it. Talk to God and get his strength to help you to change and grow to reflect him daily.
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.